Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, world. Welcome once again to Tuesday Talk with Key West Lou. I am your host, Louis Patron. No beating around the bush tonight. We're going to get right into it. There is so much to talk about, so many big things happening worldwide. Just a reminder, if you wish to call and chat with me, agree with me, disagree with me, the number is 646-478-5731. Again, 646-478-5731. The number is on your screen in front of you. We're going to start with ISIS and Iraq. Isn't it amazing? We've got a new kid on the block. We've got really a new gang in the neighborhood. I'm referring to ISIS, which spelled out is Islamic State in Iraq and Syria. Well, they're not really the new kid on the block, and they're not a new gang. They've been around for several years, but they've just come into the forefront. And what they want is they believe they are a government already, they are an entity unto themselves, and that they have a piece of Syria, and they're going to grab all of Iraq if they can do it, and they are on the move. These people are jihadists, okay? They are self-proclaimed as an independent state, actually with no specific boundaries yet. They are not Al-Qaeda. Let me set you straight, because a lot of the news reports have it screwed up. Al-Qaeda is separate from ISIS, okay? In 2004, ISIS supported Al-Qaeda. By 2008, Al-Qaeda threw them out and cut all ties with them, because these people were crazy, Al-Qaeda said. They are jihadists. They are killers. We want to have nothing to do with them. Al-Qaeda is afraid of ISIS. Having established that, let's talk about numbers here. How big is this thing, this ISIS, that all of a sudden in a matter of days is sweeping down Syria and is on the verge of entering Baghdad? Well, not really that big. The numbers are a little screwy, but they come down to this. Some reports say 2,500, that's all. Others say 3,000 to 4,000. And some say 7,000 to 8,000. I don't know, but all of these number groupings are small. And again, regardless of the size, because and they are small, they control northern Syria and parts of Iraq, and they've accomplished all this in a matter of days. They have come into Syria like Hitler went into Czechoslovakia and Poland. A blitzkrieg. Now, they're rich. They've got money. ISIS has money, big money. They have been labeled this week as the richest Muslim terrorist group. I repeat, richest Muslim terrorist group. Why? They robbed banks. Just this past week in Mosul in Iraq, they stole from one bank, yeah, I'm laughing because you're not going to believe this, $429 million, $429 million, plus gold bullion. And they're also extortionists. They stop truck drivers and threaten to kill them if they don't give them tribute, constantly. And the truck drivers give them tribute. They go to businesses and threaten to blow up the place of business unless the owner pays them a tribute. Now, what does this sound like to you and to me? To me, they're robbing banks. It sounds like Jesse James. And the way they're extorting money from people, truck drivers and businesses, the mafia. They are successful economically, primarily because of their Jesse James and mafia status. They're also getting donations, financial donations, to help them along from our good friend Saudi Arabia. To this day, I don't understand why Saudi Arabia is our good friend except for oil, but they haven't done a damn thing for us in the last 10 years about the price of oil. 17 of the people who flew those two planes into the Twin Towers on 9/11 were Saudi Arabia citizens, but we don't hear about that much. But they're getting private donations from Saudi Arabia and Qatar. Now, What are they using? You got to have guns and everything else. Let me tell you what they're using. This is terrific. These people are moving. They're moving fast. They're killing everybody. They killed 1,700 hostages the other day, primarily opposing forces. They lined them up, laid them down on their faces, and shot them all. They're killing everybody. They're not taking any prisoners. They're just moving through and killing, killing, killing. They have put the fear of God in everyone. Now, what have they got for equipment? They've captured all the stuff we left with Maliki and the Shiite government, the people we supported for 10 years, the people we've done so much for. We trained their soldiers. In one day, in one battle, the opposing army, Maliki Shiite, took off their uniforms and ran away when ISIS approached them. Anyhow, ISIS wears U.S. Army combat uniforms. They grabbed all this stuff from Maliki and the Shiites. They use U.S. guns, our vehicles, Humvees, MRAPs, tanks. And just this past week, it's amazing, absolutely amazing, they walked up. They were sitting there. The Shiites had ran, and they left a ton of Black Hawk helicopters. These guys now have Black Hawk helicopters. Fortunately, not yet do they know how to fly them. Now, we have Congress. I think most of our Congress are a bunch of idiots, I've got to say. We got these people say, we got to go to war. We got to help the Iraqis. We left too soon. This is a Republican cry. Let me tell you something. We should never have been in Iraq. We all know that. Weapons of mass destruction, Bush, Cheney, and those guys, they lied to us and got us into a war. It cost us 4,500 American lives. I don't know how many Iraqis we killed along the way. Probably 100,000, the report is. It screwed up this country economically because we had no way to pay for the war. Thank you, President Bush. But putting that aside, the cry is we should go back in. We just got out of the place in 2011, and we're down to a handful of people there right now. And the cry is we've got to go back in and help these people. It is the responsibility of the United States. We must protect ourselves also because these people, if they win there, are going to come here. Well, let me tell you something. This is a civil war over there. It's a religious war. It's the Sunni against the Shiite. They've been killing each other for hundreds of years, if not thousands of years. They're going to continue killing each other for hundreds of years and thousands of years. This has nothing to do with us. Again, it's a civil war. We should keep our nose out of there this time. Yesterday, and I say unfortunately, President Obama said, I'm going to send in 275 troops to protect the embassy in Baghdad. Well, let me tell you something. There's a handful of soldiers there now protecting it. We're sending 275 more in. And there was a little addition at the end of the president's statement for whatever else they may be required to do. We're going to have another Vietnam. We already spent 10 years in that country. Now we're going to go back in. We started Vietnam that way with a handful of soldiers and then built up. We cannot afford another 10 years of war. The American people don't want the war. Maliki and the Shiites, who are controlling the government, don't want us over there to help them. Remember, in the last year, Maliki's refused to sign a document permitting us to leave some people there. He didn't want us, okay? They don't want us. We don't want to go. What the hell are we even sending 275 people over for? Which brings me now, these 275 are primarily there in order to protect the embassy in Baghdad. Let me tell you something you may not be aware of, something I only recently learned. I knew along the way over the years, because there was much talk about how big this embassy was. I don't know why we had to build such a big embassy in Baghdad, but we did. Do you know how big it is? It is the size of 6 football fields. We put a series of buildings up with a wall around them, the size of 6 football fields. I don't know how the hell we're going to defend it with 275 Marines or the handful that are already there. This is another disaster in the making. The last thing I want to see again and I'm sure the last thing you want to see again, because we all have pride in our country. Remember the helicopters in Vietnam going in to take the workers from the United States Assembly out before the people from North Korea took over and crashed through the gates? I was ashamed for my country. I was embarrassed for my country, and I was also irritated that it was happening. It's going to happen again if we don't watch out. Okay, leaving Jesse James and the Mafia alone, let's move over to a specific part of Iraq. I refer to Kurdistan. This is interesting. Kurdistan's in the northern part of Iraq. You don't hear much about the Kurds. The Sunni and the Shiites fight each other. The Kurds in the north mind their own business. They're a small entity, and they really don't want to be bothered with the rest of the country because they think they're crazy. The Kurds have turned into, Kurdistan has turned into sort of an autonomous region. Not formally, no one drew a line and said, this is Kurdistan. They're just out there and nobody bothers with them right now. And one of the interesting things, in the last 10 years, the Kurds have developed a system of values, a mental system of values comparable to those we have in the United States. They all live together. Sunni and Shiite, Christians, all live together. No one kills each other. No one yells at each other. No one spits at each other. No one gets crucified. By the way, I forgot to tell you that this ISIS group, they're crucifying some of the people they're capturing. I wrote an article on this last week that, you know, renounce your faith or be crucified. Well, they're just crucifying the opposition. They're hanging people on crosses to die. In 2014, we are doing this in the world. All right, getting back to Kurdistan. They're happy. Their roads are back in. Their buildings are up. They got water. They got electricity. They're not bothering anybody. Something's going to happen in due course, probably. But right now, they're happy. They've got an elected official. Everyone loves him. What's good about them? They got oil up there big time. All of Iraq has oil, but Kurdistan has a lot of oil. In the last 3 years, Kurdistan, understand, not a country, just a region that's autonomous. They run on their own, signed several contracts with major oil companies, you know, including from the United States, ExxonMobil and Chevron. They're working good. Maliki doesn't like them, okay, because the Kurds have money, and this gives them power and status equal to statehood. He needs them because the rest of Iraq doesn't have that kind of standing. You know what their capacity is for oil up there? And no wonder ExxonMobil and Chevron have signed contracts. It is estimated that Kurdistan alone has 45 billion barrels of oil under the ground, 45 billion barrels of oil. And once they're up and running and they're working towards it and building, they will be able to export 400,000 barrels of oil a day. Now we're going to go to our friend, Chase Manhattan Bank. I hate banks. I think they're whores. And most of you, I'm sure, agree with me. They're pigs. I'm sorry. They brought this country to its knees in 2008 with the mortgage crisis. We bailed them out. They paid the government back, but they never gave any money to the people. To borrow a dollar today, you have to pledge your blood, your soul, and your next three children that you're going to have. They just don't do anything for anyone but themselves. They invest their money back and forth. They know how to make money without loaning money. Remember, banks used to loan money. That was their primary function. And they charge for everything. Well, you know what they're going to charge for next? Chase has announced this past week that as of August 1st, they're going to charge you for cash you deposit in your accounts. Yes, if you have a checking account, a savings account, or both, they are going to charge you for depositing your money in their bank. They're going to charge you for holding your money. And they're going to charge you 25 cents for $100 deposited. That's after there's going to be a minimum amount you have to have before it kicks in. They haven't decided that yet. But they're going to charge 25 cents for $100 deposited. And some of the larger banks are already doing this, but we don't know it because of the bigger ones. And on anything over $10,000, they charge 20 cents for every $100 deposited. Now, you have to understand how banks work. Once you deposit money in the bank, you think that's your money. As soon as you deposit it, under the law in this country, a law passed by the Congress of the United States, under the law of this country, title to the money passes to the bank immediately. You no longer own the money. The bank owns the money. And what do they do with that money? Well, I'll tell you right now, 5 o'clock every night on the business day, that money gets shipped all over the world electronically by computers today. Everything's easy. And it's deposited in different places all over, Shanghai, Moscow, South America, wherever they think they can make a buck, these banks, they deposit it. And by 8 o'clock the next morning, that money comes back into the bank, into the accounts where they purportedly are holding your money. Now, in that scheme overnight, the banks average about 20% income on that money. They make 20% every night on your money. And what do you get for that? 1% interest? They're making 20% overnight, okay? And they still want to charge. They're whores. You can't call it any other way. They still want to charge. Now, for when you deposit money in the bank, they're going to charge you for holding your money. And Chase is the first bank that's going to do it to the, you know, Main Street America, and all of them will follow soon. Now, I want to stay with the banks for a while because they continue to be whores, and you're not going to believe what I'm going to tell you now. You know what dormant money is? Some people, they forget they got money in a bank account. It sits there for several years. Or they know it's there, they just don't touch it. It's a savings account. I got $10,000 in there. I'm not going to touch it. I'm just going to leave it there and let it draw interest. I don't need it. God bless. Some people have safety deposit boxes. They keep the family jewels in there. Or they keep cash that maybe they shouldn't have in the safety deposit box. Well, now, here's what's going to happen. Savings and checkings accounts and safety deposit boxes, if they are declared inactive, that means nobody put any money in or took any money out or used the safety deposit box over a period of time. You only got to use it one time for this not to work. But if you haven't used it, then the banks have the right to take your money and or the contents of the safety deposit box, and they will do it. They did it last year in Australia, and they grabbed $360 million out of dormant accounts. You say, well, they wouldn't do that in the United States. They most certainly will, and they most certainly are. The state of California has passed a similar law. If your money is dormant for 3 years, they will take it. Georgia just passed a law, and they're really pigs. If your money is dormant for 1 year, they will take it. Now, why are they taking it? This money is not going to the banks. This money is going to the state, or will go to the national government when our national government does it. Right now, the money in California and Georgia goes to the state. States are broke. They need help in paying off their debts. They need financing for their underfunded state pension plans. And the states are agreeable to passing this kind of law to take your money and mine out of safety, out of checking accounts and savings accounts, because it will help the state government to pay off its debt. This is legalized thievery, and it's here. And within 2 or 3 years, every state in the union is going to be doing it. And again, I don't like banks, and most of you don't. But what makes it worse, I don't like the government that permits this. Now we have state governments saying the people can be screwed. They're joining with the banks because they're going to get the money. I'm going to stay with banks for one more moment. I'm going to talk about offshore banking accounts, and I'm going to talk about Putin, Russia's dear Putin. We know that in the United States, our corporations have offshore accounts with billions of dollars, if not trillions of dollars, that they don't pay taxes on through legal chicanery, which is permitted by laws which our Congress has passed over the years and our presidents have approved by signing into law. can incorporate in some little place like Bermuda, Cayman Islands, Switzerland, and never do any business there other than deposit their money there. Money made in the United States, but because they keep this account in this little place, and because they're incorporated there even though they don't really do business, that's called an offshore account that cannot be taxed under our laws because, again, of legislation passed by Congress, okay? And it's hurting us. You've read about this. It's hurt. We've got to get at that money. It should be taxed. Why should you and I, who work for a living, have our salaries taxed, but these major corporations don't have a lot of their profit taxed? Does not make sense to me. Okay, how does this tie into Putin and Russia? Putin said this week, we're having trouble here in Russia with offshore accounts, okay? Same as in the United States. He says, I'm going to look into it and do something about it. They should be paying taxes to us. You heard me. Russia's got a similar problem. And here's all I want to say to you. I'll bet you that Putin solves that problem within the next 6 months, okay? And why? Because, well, he's a totalitarian state, which we don't want to be. He controls everything. He controls his Congress, his legislative body over there. He'll have them pass certain laws, and that money's going to get taxed. And there's a lot of money sitting out there in Russian offshore accounts. And, again, I'm betting you money. Putin gets his hands on it when we've been trying for years to get our hands on ours and haven't been able to do it. And I say the reason is why. Because the Congress of the United States that approved these offshore accounts do not want to do anything to alienate or screw corporate America, who supports them with dollars for their campaigns, all kinds of perks, jobs afterwards. They're not going to bite the hand that feeds them. And the hand that feeds them is not you and me, taxpayers of America. It is corporate America. Now I want to move over to Eric Cantor and his defeat this past week. Couldn't have happened to a nicer guy. He's majority leader in the Republican House of Representatives. I never liked the guy. From day one, I didn't like him. He moved me the wrong way. I'd listen to him and watch him, and I'd say, this guy's screwing me. That's the only impression I could get. He seemed to talk with, you know, two tongues out of two sides of his mouth. And it was obvious he's always pushing for corporate America. And this guy came a long way. He's the majority leader. You know, he could be the speaker soon. He might even be president someday. He's relatively young. His congressional district in Richmond, Virginia, in a primary against the Tea Party man, the Tea Party man won. What's funny is Cantor was ahead on the polls by 40%. He was supposed to win. And instead, this Garth, the Tea Party guy, won by 11%. What's even funnier is the money that both candidates had. Millions of dollars went into this election in support of Eric Cantor. Goldman Sachs Bank, financial institution, put $5.4 million in the primary campaign on behalf of Eric Cantor. They raised the money from their sources and deposited in his campaign accounts. Can you imagine? $5.4 million came into Cantor just from one source. Whereas his opponent, Brett, he only raised $200,000 for the whole campaign on his own. He said an interesting thing after the election, Brett. He says, Cantor favored special tax credits to billionaires instead of taking care of us, the normal folks, which was true. Now, why am I going through all this? You've been hearing it for a week, and I'm not trying to beat a dead horse here, but something interesting happened, and this is the story. Boeing airplanes, they make airplanes, they sell them all over the world, big company. Cantor was an obvious and known friend to Boeing. The day after the election, the day after Cantor was beat, Boeing stock tumbled dramatically. It went down. It went down 6 points in the week itself. It wiped out. The stock went down sufficiently that it wiped out all gains that Boeing had made since the first of the year. And all the experts say it was because of Eric Cantor's defeat. Because there are certain laws. Boeing sells planes all over the world. They may sell 60 planes to China, 100 planes to Canada, 50 planes to France, but they have to have special laws in place so they don't have to pay the kind of taxes they should. And there was an export sales tax of some sort running through Congress, hasn't passed yet, needs Cantor to get it passed, they feel. It might have passed between now and the end of the year, most definitely next year if there is a Republican House again, and it is anticipated there's going to be one. And without that new export sales law, Boeing is not going to make a hell of a lot of money in the next few years. Isn't that interesting? A major corporation, its stock value went down because an elected representative lost his job, a simple congressman, which shows you how interconnected corporate America is with our legislators in Washington. Everyone is on the take in one fashion or another. Let's move over now to the children who are immigrating over the border from Mexico to Texas. Almost 50,000 children so far this year, and it is anticipated the number by the end of the year will reach 90,000, are coming from El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras, up through Latin America, through Mexico, and crossing over the Rio Grande River into Texas. Now, number one, you have to understand, these kids are coming alone. No ma and pa with them. No big uncle, big brother. No Pied Piper leading them. They are drifting out of their countries and just moving northward day by day. Some of them have coyotes. Coyotes are these guys who pay if you're from one of these countries, and they'll guarantee, quote-unquote, they're going to get you in the United States. Well, it generally costs $7,000 to come out of these countries. Most of these coyotes dump these kids. They take them off the bus, off the truck, after a couple of hundred miles, and they're on their own. These kids walked from Guatemala, El Salvador, Honduras. They went through swamps with snakes. They crawled over deserts without water. They reached the Rio Grande River. They had no way of getting across. They came across on rubber boats. They floated on logs. Anything that would float, they held onto. And they came into Texas. Now, Texas can't handle all these people at one time, and it's understandable. Obama stepped in right away. He put FEMA in charge, and he threw a group of these kids right away to Arizona, where they had a facility, which they put up for immigrants there, but the immigrants aren't going into Arizona like they did before. But Obama says, we got the facilities, we got the manpower, we got the know-how, we'll take care of them there and get them moving, and they're opening three other places right away. So you've got 50,000 kids already. These are 4 to 17 years old. I've seen pictures of them on the Internet. You must have also. It's terrible. It's awful. Some of them are babies. I see girls 6, 7, 8 years old holding babies that are less than a year old in their laps. They all came, and they got here because they want America. They want to live here. They don't want to live over there. There's a lot of violence where they are in these three countries. One girl, when asked why'd you come, she says, and she was 17, she says, do I face possible death in immigrating or sure death in staying? There are gangs and violence, murders in the schools and the neighborhoods daily in these countries. So the kids are running away looking for a better life. I hope they get it. You know, and we're really being tested now. This is a humanitarian cause with no BS. The world is looking at us. Let's do the right thing and take care of these kids. I hope we do not screw up. Well, that's the show for this week. Hope you enjoyed it. A lot of things happening out there, and we don't always get all the information, and I hope I contribute a little something each week. I wanted to tell you again, if you missed the show, it's archived. Most of the people who listen to this, I know 2,000 people a week listen to the show over the next 7 days on the archived version. It's also carried on YouTube. Remember, I wrote a book, The World Upside Down. You can get it on Amazon.com, The World Upside Down. If you like the show, you'll like my book. If you don't like the show, you'll hate the book. Good being with you again. Thank you for joining me. I look forward to talking with you next week.